This is Radio Bolity, broadcast every Friday here at WNZK Radio, 690 AM, hosted by syndicated columnist Ray Hanania, Ali Yunus, and Layla Al-Husseini. Get information on show guests and topics by visiting RadioBolity.com. We want to hear your views. Call in during the show by dialing 248-557-3300. And now, Radio Bolity.
And good morning and welcome to Radio Bolity. I'm Ray Hanania here.
And I am Ali Yunus in Amman.
Hey, Ali, how is everything in Amman?
Nice and sunny, and everything is calm and quiet. On Friday, of course, on Saturday, Sunday, and the rest of the week, nothing is quiet in this country.
We're gonna ask you if you're in a refugee camp with the refugees in a minute. Radio Bolity is brought to you by Ziad Brothers Importing at Ziad.com. The offices of Michigan accident attorney Jumana Kayrouz at JumanaKayrouz.com. Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS. Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. And Imam Mardini and the American Muslim Center at AmericanMuslimCenter.org. We also want to thank our partners, including MC Gold TV at MCGoldTV.tv, Sabil Media at SabilMedia.com, The Washington Report on Middle East Affairs at WRMEA.org, and Life for Relief and Development at LifeUSA.org, also the Dearborn Free Press. Good morning, Michigan is supported by Layla Al-Husseini, the host of Good Morning Michigan, broadcast Monday through Thursday right here at this station at WNZK AM 690, Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 a.m. Eastern. You can listen to Radio Bolity on the radio, of course, as you're probably doing, or you can always go online and go to RadioBolity.com. We urge you to support us and do what you can because Arabs, Ali, are under siege. In Arab journalists especially, but Arabs are under siege. Even Google has started a new campaign to shut down. Now, it's kind of ironic because, Ali, last week or a couple weeks ago, Google announced that it was going to recognize the West Bank as Palestine on its map. We don't know how long that's going to last. But they've started a campaign as if to kind of make the pro-Israel fanatics happy to start shutting down Google websites and blogs that are too pro-Arab. And
wow.
They're across the country. I'm hearing from all kinds of friends that they're, and in fact, a couple of mine have been targeted by Google, and I've been trying to ask them, what are you doing? They literally will shut you down. And you have no right to appeal. And it's only the blogs and only the websites controlled by Google that are owned and operated by American Arabs or Arabs in the Middle East. And it's one, I don't know, it's kind of, I'm surprised they can get away with it. But when you think about it, Google is privately owned, although I think they're kind of like the telephone company. They should be regulated by the government. Although I don't know if that's better or worse for us as Arabs.
Well, that's a very, really very serious issue, that if Google starts to regulate the speech of Americans or whoever, especially if it's not a hate speech, if it's not a criminal speech, it's not calling for murder or killing or hate crimes, I don't see why Google would want to do that unless it is in itself practicing hate speech and trying to deprive Arab Americans or Arabs in general of their right to their opinions and advocate their issues as long as those issues are within the framework of the law, American law, that's what I mean here. And I think we should have a counter campaign against Google to highlight.
We should. I'll tell you, Ali, I agree with you, and this is more serious than people think. I've had two sites that are pro-Arab sites that, you know, because I have several blogs, and I've been hearing from other Arab writers around the country that Google sites that they have are being shut down. And what they do is they literally shut your blog down and claim, oh, you know what, it sounds like we think your blog is spam. Our algorithm has detected it. Sometimes it makes a mistake, but don't worry, we'll get back to you. And then they don't do anything. And there's nobody to talk to over there. I think, and, you know, I'm not being paranoid, but, you know, you always have to be suspicious. But I think 2 weeks ago when Google recognized Palestine, remember that?
Yes.
They said that Palestine is going to be recognized when they refer to the Palestinian territory.
Well, that's legal. That's legal.
Yeah, right. I think they came under so much attack that I think Google now is slowly compensating, you know, for this by tearing down pro-Arab sites that the pro-Israeli groups are targeting. All you have to do is complain about a site, but, and just understand me for 1 second, if you, Ali, want to complain about somebody, there's a process. If your site has been complained about and is taken down, there's no process. You have no right of, habeas corpus.
That's it. So they just take
that's it. It's done. It's over.
Well,
yes.
You could complain about the site of the Jerusalem Post.
But they won't. But see, the point is, you're absolutely right. We could complain about some of but they have to be Google sites.
What are
so
Google
what
sites?
I've decided, I'm going to boycott Google. I'm going to be moving my blogs to another site, you know, that I control rather than staying at Google. Because Google, and you know, it's kind of tough to do because Google is the big site.
What about
In the Internet. I don't know. I'm just bringing it up. I think it's a big story. But as you know, Ali, and I didn't want to start with the journalism issue. I was hoping we'll do that later. But, you know, as you know, Ali, the Arabs in this community are voiceless. You know, we have leaders that don't do anything. They hold conferences in Washington, D.C. They do all these big things. They bring all the same old speakers over and over again. You know, they celebrate, you know, the Nakba 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25, you know, 30, 40, 45, 50. Now it's 65 years, and they're not doing anything different. It's so, like, nauseating to me that they're so ineffective, and it's disgraceful. But, you know, if the community doesn't want to do anything about it, you know, what do you and I do? We have a radio show. But before we do that, let's talk about what you're in Amman, Jordan right now.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful country. We love it. And but there's been such a big ruse about the Syrian refugees, ruckus, I mean, about the Syrian refugees, half a million Syrian, or 500,000, I think, Syrian yes. refugees in Jordan. It's causing a lot of tension. Tell us, what are you seeing over there? What's it like?
Well, it's not a lot of attention as far as the population. The populations in Jordan are by all measures are pro the Syrian people. They are against Bashar al-Assad.
Right.
Everywhere you go, they're against Bashar al-Assad. There's a very tiny, tiny minority pro Bashar al-Assad, and they can't even come up with 100 people that demonstrate for Bashar at the Syrian embassy. So the refugees, you know, some members of the Jordanian parliament and the king himself said that, you know, the Syrian refugees will eventually become, you know, a percentage of the 10% of the Jordanian population, and with that will put a strain on the water resources and other resources in Jordan. And that's a legitimate concern, but, you know, the Syrian refugees, you know, are cared for by the international organizations. It's not that Jordanian government that, you know, give them the money or help them. But, you know, they're not restricted to a Zaatari refugee camp in north of Jordan. They are everywhere. Uh-huh. I've seen some of them, you know, in grocery stores. I've seen some of them, you know, walking down the street. You know, people like moved from Syria and settled in Jordan, in different cities in Jordan. You know, they're business people. And a lot of them are very rich people. So they are buying condominiums, apartments, maybe set up businesses. So the rich, industrial Syrians who have businesses in Syria, I think they moved to Jordan with their businesses, and they tried to invest in the country in order to keep going as far as their business is concerned. But, you know, the very poor go to the refugee camp, and the refugee camp, and I went there last week, it's like a big city. It has its own shops, its own spaces of entertainment. It has a social life, mosque. It has a mosque, and where people can go congregate, and offices of the international organizations, police station. It has its own entrances, its own exits, and a lot of people are very poor there, and it's not a good sight. I mean, you don't want to leave your house and live in a camp, you know, for a year or two.
Yeah.
You know, that's
yeah.
not something. And for Palestinians, they relate to the Syrians because that's how they started. They started in a refugee camp, you know, somewhere in the West Bank or Jordan, Syria, or Lebanon. So you find a lot of sympathy.
So is there a lot of resentment then from the, you know, the Jordanians, the non-Palestinian Jordanians?
Well, not a lot of resentment.
For the growth of the refugees, because there has been some tension between Jordanians, you know, and Palestinians since 1948. Israel's done everything it can to provoke that tension. And, you know, there's been a lot of dissatisfaction with what the government has done, although King Abdullah does try to do the best he can, although I think he could do more with Israel. But, I mean, there's some unhappy Palestinians, and aren't they the majority of Jordan today?
But you see, the situation with the Syrian, it isn't because they are Syrian. The situation is economic. Jordan is in dire economic situation.
So they just don't have the wherewithal, in other words, the economic wherewithal,
right,
to help handle all these refugees coming into the country.
Yes.
What kind of other problems, is it causing crime problems? Is it causing other issues, or is it just resources?
Resources, but the resources here, when you have an influx of a certain kind of population, there's a huge demand of a sector, let's say a real estate sector. That sector the prices to go up. And then the native population cannot afford the new prices to buy an apartment or rent an apartment because there's a huge demand by the newcomers, the refugees. It had happened with Iraq in 2003. Iraqis came, but the Iraqis did not live in refugee camps. The Iraqis came with tens of millions of dollars in the country. So they started buying buildings, real estates, restaurants, everywhere. So the prices of land and real estate shot up 500-600% to a point that native populations, if someone want to get married and buy an apartment, the price is now 10 times higher because of the great demand made by the Iraqi and newcomers to Jordan. So the dynamics of any population coming to a country, the prices will go up, and then economic situation, inflation goes up with the local populations, and that resentment tends to be fueled because of the new economic situation. Other than that, I think the Syrians are welcome to Jordan, in Jordan by the average Jordanians or even government officials, some members of parliament. But some people are trying to justify the Jordanian government lack of planning and lack of economic progress, and blame it on the Syrians. And I've heard that before. Like, why am I in solidarity? You say, well, we got so many refugees, the Palestinians and the Iraqis and the Lebanese in the 70s, and now the Syrians. So instead of themselves trying to improve the country, they blame it on external sources. And that's, in my opinion, what's happening in Jordan as far as the Syrians are concerned.
Yeah, and has it resulted in any other conflict with, the military or with Israel or, you know, even with Syria? Has Syria, these are their people. Has the Syrian government done anything, or are the Syrians mad at Jordan because the Jordanian royalty has kind of recognized the campaign against Bashar al-Assad?
Well, Jordan is part of the American security umbrella, and it's not Turkey. Turkey could say, we want to bring down Bashar al-Assad, and we should bring him down, because Turkey is such a big country, it's such a powerful country, a NATO member. Jordan cannot afford to have such proclamations and pronouncements against Bashar al-Assad. All Jordan has to do at least officially and in public, is stay in the middle of the road, even though privately they are, you know, hoping that the United States gets rid of Bashar al-Assad. And Syria, Bashar al-Assad said last week that he's not mad at Jordan because Jordan, you know, cannot afford to say no to big countries like Saudi Arabia, big country as far as resources like Qatar, UAE, U.S., and Israel is there too. So Jordan is caught between, you know, a rock and a hard place as far as Syria. So it's waiting to see where the situation will shift. Will Bashar al-Assad succeed and retain himself in power and Jordan will have to deal with him? Or a new regime will be installed after Bashar al-Assad and Jordan will have to deal with that. So Jordan is taking the middle of the road approach, at least publicly. And privately, I think they're not, you know, happy with Bashar al-Assad as far as the killing of the Syrian people. You know, over 70 to 80,000 people have died so far. Jordan has half a million in Turkey maybe, or half a million, 4 million inside Syria. So that it's a dire situation. And Syria itself is being destroyed. So the issue is we are destroying Syria with this conflict that is increasingly become sectarian and a civil war. So the Syrian population are by far the most open society in the Arab world. It's very diverse. It's not sectarian. Christians and you know, and Shia or Muslim, they're not, you know, sectarianly inclined or having hard line as far as their sector religious views, the way you see in Lebanon, for example, or Iraq, for that matter. So, and the situation in Syria really is bad news for the entire Arab world, especially that Egypt is increasingly becoming a failed state, and Iraq has become a failed state already, thanks to the war against, you know, by George W. Bush, and the sectarian war against Shia and Muslims, and where Christians were slaughtered, you know, as well. So the worry is Syria will be transformed into another Iraq, into another failed state, and that what made a lot of people concerned here in Jordan and elsewhere.
Yeah. We're talking with Ali Younes. I'm Ray Hanania. I'm in Chicago. Ali's in Amman, Jordan. He's given us some interesting insight. If you want to call and ask some questions, we'll talk a little bit more about Jordan and what Ali is seeing during his trip through Jordan. If you want to call at 248-557-3300, we'll take some calls. And then after the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk a little bit about the onslaught against the Arab community and the total, and maybe Ali doesn't agree, I don't know if you agree with me, but the total ineffectiveness of American Arabs and even the Arab world. You know, they won't do anything in this country. They're useless. Google is literally shutting us down. And now as you search Google, a lot of what used to be very pro-Arab news sites that used to be included on Google News, which is one of the most popular places where people go to get news in the world, Google News is also blocking Arab news sites from writers, you know, and bloggers. They're including all the writers and bloggers from the pro-Israel side, but they're dropping all the pro-Arab writers and bloggers and even eliminating some of the Arab news sites that don't fall within its acceptability standards, which are undefined. They're shutting them down. We're also going to talk about the shameful conduct of the Newseum, which is the Museum of American Journalism in Washington, D.C., that last week announced that it was going to honor 88 journalists who were killed in conflict zones last year in 2012. Two of them were Palestinians working for Al-Quds TV in the Gaza Strip. And you know, nothing happens in the Gaza Strip without Hamas being involved. So the Israelis accused Al-Quds of being part of Hamas, and when they saw the car with two journalists in it, with the letters TV on the roof, they fired missiles and killed them.
Yeah, I remember that.
All they were doing was reporting the news, and they killed them. And when the museum was going to include them as fallen journalists, the Anti-Defamation League, which, you know, is kind of ironic because it does more defamation than anybody else
yeah, right.
In this country, especially against Arabs. Mm-hmm. They protested, and the museum removed their names from the list. And there's been no peep from the Arab community. I'm reading an ugly review from the National Review by a writer named Clifford May. He's such a racist bigot who hates Arabs, I think, based on the way he's writing. It's just horrible politics. And we're going to write about, we'll talk about all these other things. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. But our number is 248-557-3300 if you want to give us a call. We're going to take a break here with Ray Hanania.
And I am Ali Yunus.
And we'll take your calls right after these messages.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Import offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Aft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
Jake's Candy, 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Sale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sale at 718-213-1264, or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
It was my job to save people. Until one night, I was in a car accident. I couldn't work, and the insurance company, they fought me every step of the way. I didn't know what to do.
Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I'm Shumana Kairouz. I know what it's like to be refused your rights. When you call, my attorneys and I will fight to get you the compensation you deserve.
Shumana handled my medical benefits and lost wages, and she got me a settlement.
If you have been injured, call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي باك ريجل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. That's Zaid, huh?
That's right, that's Zaid, yeah.
He wants to be a radio talk show host.
That's
right. We need more Arabs on radio.
Every time I'm on the show, he wants to be on the show.
He's ready to go. See, right. That's it. We need more of that. We need to... educate our kids instead of just being doctors. Maybe they could be doctors and radio talk show hosts.
At the same
doctors
time,
and
yes.
Journalists. At the same time. That way they'll make their mothers and parents happy and they'll do some good for the Arab community. Well, we were talking about, some of the problems that the Arab community are facing. We've got a caller on the line, Issa, who's been patiently hanging on from just before the break. Let's welcome Issa and say hi. Where are you from, Issa?
Detroit area, Livonia.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for calling.
Alain, about Google.
Go ahead.
I was up from Google to Facebook. We're not using it as we to promote the right policy for the Arab.
Right.
Same thing with Facebook. I've been trying to do something... let the people communicate while it's free. See? Well, shut down the Facebook, too. We have to do something in Syria, not just talk about it and arguing like the attack for the Israeli last week. If you support it, you don't support it. Are you you glorify it? We don't glorify it. I want you to touch this subject. See? We don't want nobody to get killed, neither side. And
have any of your sites been shut down, Issa?
Beg your pardon?
Have any of your sites been shut down?
No. I deal mostly with Facebook, but I criticize our people. I've been trying for a month with our kids.
To wake them up, right? I mean, don't we got to wake up as a community?
As the Arab international.
Yeah, not just in the United States. I mean, they just had a big journalism conference in Dubai. And I was going through, you know, the Dubai Press Club was promoting it, and, you know, I think it's great. And then when I was reading through it, I see that, you know, they don't hire Arab, you know, they don't hire Arab journalists. They hire Americans to do all the training, you know, in the Arab world. And then you wonder why the Arab journalists who graduate there are worse than some of the American journalists who are bigoted and biased against Arabs. You know, we don't think sometimes. We just do stuff. And it's really without, I'm shocked.
That control, who controlled that?
Yeah, and it's an influence, though, and control does come from influence. I'm not going to say they control anything, but I'll tell you, they're better organized than us.
They
know what I mean?
They are.
Yeah, and the subject, Ray, now
yeah.
Syria.
Yes.
We are in the same boat.
Yes.
Assad or against Assad?
Right.
Is getting
we're being voice. Divided, you think?
Yes, even shamefully, unfortunately, the educated people, either this side or this side. Now, I started a campaign called Kiss Hassan's Feet. You have to go and see Hassan. Instead of him firing speech every 3-4 months, you go on there. Maybe the man has got his hand tied. Can do nothing. Maybe Assad, he can do nothing. So we try to have committee talk. I know the press conference is far away, but we could talk to the man and see. If you want to be a leader in Damascus, welcome. Because Syria is, we all are Syrian. Jordan, Palestine, we all Syrian, greater Syria. Now we're falling in the same trap we did in 1917. Now, the Russian playing the game. The Russian are not with us.
Yeah, they're working with the Israelis.
Missile, we pay for the missile. Right. I wrote,
right.
I did something with Leila Al-Husseini, the clerk. Leila Al-Husseini, she doesn't want to be involved. Yes, she last week she wanted to discuss that thing, the missile attack. And it did divide us because you glorify it or you don't glorify it.
All right.
Just like, which one is first, the egg or the chicken?
All right. Issa, listen, thank you. Thank you for calling and listening. I think you brought up a great topic. Thank you.
We'll do something. You know, Hassan, you want to be a king? Hassan will be a king. We should reconcile and do something.
I wish we could, but I'll tell you what, it takes both sides, though. It's not just the rebels. It's Bashar al-Assad needs to do something, and he's not. Instead of, you know, killing civilians or even killing people, his military, he needs to control them, even if he's not in charge. He needs to do something. He needs to take the steps to save the country. He needs to do it. He's the leader. He has to lead, and he needs to lead. That's the big problem.
Yeah. Ray, I could write in Arabic very good. In English, I couldn't.
No. Listen, I appreciate it. Don't worry. And I respect you for calling.
I want to awake that giant. Our generation, you know, our kids.
Yeah.
They are divided. If it's possible that I could elect 2 minutes for even less for a little poem is against nobody. But I want to try to, as I said, awaken that sleeping giant.
All right, go ahead. You can read it real quick.
Real quick.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
In Arabic.
In Arabic. قطعت يدي يا من قطعت يدي جبرت بأيدي فائت العدد تلك الأيادي البيض أنصع من زمن به الخلفاء في رشدي قطع وشل واذبح فلا شلل ينئيك عن قطع وملتحد تلك الأيادي البيض مورقة وتحولت روحا على جسدي لا القطع يرهبنا أيرهبنا في حومة العلياء من أحد نحن المبادئ والعقائد فيه دمنا فلا سيف بمنغمدي وصليلها وسليلها رفعا أمجاد أجداد على عمدي فسل المغولة تجبك من حلب هرم الجماجم فاستبح وزدي وطني لقد دمرت يا وطني وحسرتاه عليك واكبدي جل المصاب وخطبهم جلل أيحرم العمران في بلدي نوح الثكالى غير ذي فجع آسا يزاجرهم على ولدي وجدت نداءات لها أذنا لكنها النخوات لم تجدي دول أتت لا خير في دول نهجت بأقبح منهج حقدي فلنا مساواة وتسوية ولنا التشرذم وهو في صددي هم يملكون سخي أسلحة بالفتك إذ باتوا على حسدي لا تحسدوا يا قوم أنفسكم فتراثنا باق إلى الأبد. Thank you. السلام عليكم.
He said thank you. You have
thank
a good day.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll talk to you later. Our number, 248-557-3300, if you want to call in and read a poem, that's okay. I don't know, Ali, what'd you think?
I think it's a great poem. It's a really very moving when you hear it in Arabic, and if you understand Arabic the way I understand it. It's a great piece, but it also laments on the way our culture is and the way our dire situation is. You know, it's similar to what we're talking about, you know, how ineffective we are at this point. Yet we come from, you know, we hail from a great historic nation that, you know, we can succeed if we put our minds to it and if we can work together. And that's our problem, in my opinion, and your opinion, I'm sure, that if we can work together, we could, you know, move forward and by bounds and leaps. Toward achieving, you know, our goals or, our, you know, unity for our people, and especially in this country. And if we can't do it in this country, if we can't do it in this country, I don't think we can do it anywhere else. This country allows you to unite. It allows you to work freely. It has the law to protect you, but you have to be very smart about it. Unlike many of our past and present community leaders, who, like you correctly pointed out, you know, have not done anything the way, you know, as far as results, the way we would like them to do. So year after year, it's the same thing, same people. And I think after these people pass the stage, retire or move, I think we will have no leaders, you know, because you find less people are involved in the public affairs of the community. Do you see that, Ray?
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I'm just very worried because, you know, we have a few people and we don't get along. There are a couple like the Electronic Intifada, you know, Ali Abu Nima. I mean, the guy's a smart guy, but he won't work with anybody that he disagrees with. It's part of the Arab mentality, just like Bashar al-Assad. You know, Assad, there's no democracy. You know, there's no such thing as compromise. There's no democracy in the Middle East. It's a dictatorship, whether it's a government or an organization.
Even
you do what they want, or you're the enemy, even if you support the same goal.
Even if you are elected by the people democratically, you will still
right.
behave as a dictator.
Just like in Egypt.
Yes.
And the way Arafat did, you know, I still... You know, it's like we were never happy. We want it to be all or nothing. And we want it to be precise. We want exactly, you know, the right way. But when it's not exactly the right way, we don't accept it. We fight it. And we tear it down. We end up tearing ourselves down, don't you think? I mean, that's why we're so easy targets for Google to, you know, shut down blogs written by Arab Americans, you know, or writers. And it's a very subtle thing that they're doing that's going to have a great impact because, you know, they're going to allow some of the Arab newspapers to stay online, the recognized institutions, you know, the government sites. But they're going to shut down the activists on both sides, you know, whether it's Ali Abu Nima's place or my place. They don't care what we think. You know, the Israelis look at both of us and hate us both. You know, yet we can't seem to get together. So I don't know. Our number 248-557-3300. Martin is on the line. Let's welcome Martin here with Ali Yunus and Ray Hanani. And Martin, go ahead.
No, Martin just dropped off. Sorry about that.
Oh, he did? Okay, no big deal, James. 248-557-3300 is our number if you want to call in. I'll tell you what, let's take our last break, and then let's talk a little bit more about the museum. Because the Israelis are saying, look, Al-Quds TV, and I don't know what you think, Ellie, but Al-Quds TV was operated by Hamas, and therefore anybody who works for Al-Quds TV, according to Israel, is a terrorist. That's what they're writing, and they should be killed. Now, there's no judge, well, there's no jury, there's no trial, you know, and they were just killed. Yeah. And then not only were they killed, but they won't even be recognized. No one is allowed to question what Israel did, not even American journalists.
Well, this argument is very dangerous because, let's say, when the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003, that's a declaration of war against Iraq, and Iraq has the right to defend itself legally under international law. Now, since CNN, Fox News, ABC, NBC, news staff go to Iraq to cover the war, and since they are Americans and the Americans declared war, would Iraq have the right to kill American journalists under the argument that they are part of America that declared war on them? So just because Hamas and Israel have a fight, this does not mean that we should kill journalists who, work in a Hamas-owned TV. Would Israel, does that justify killing Israeli journalists? Because Israel is not recognized by some of the Arab countries, and when it declares war against Gaza or against Hamas or anybody, Hamas has the right to kill Israeli journalists too, if that argument is true. And I know it isn't.
Right, and I agree with you. I understand the point you're making is, if the Arabs were going to be like Israel, they would say, well, all these Israeli-controlled media in Israel, which covers things, are fair targets. You know, they can start targeting those journalists, just the way Israel targeted the Palestinian journalists. I mean, this guy at the National Review is arguing that, the United States has declared Hamas a terrorist organization. That means these two journalists who were working for Al-Quds, which is a nonviolent news media, could be killed, just murdered, just shot missiles. So they're saying it's okay for Israel to fire missiles, but it's not okay for the Palestinians to fire missiles. It's okay for Israel to kill Palestinians, but it's not okay for the Palestinians to respond or defend themselves. That really is sick. But that's what's happening in our society in America, and the poor Americans, they're brainwashed, they're numb, they're like, they're kind of in a catatonic state when it comes to the Middle East. They don't know what's going on, and it's really shameful. Let's take a quick break, Ali, and then when we come back, maybe we can take some phone calls at 248-557-3300 or talk some more about what you think about what we could do or what should be done. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we're going to be right back here at Radio Ballady right after these messages.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
If you get into a car accident,
How will you pick up the pieces when you can't work, when the bills pile up? Who will help you? Call 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
I called Jemana. She took care of everything. My medical bill, lost wages, and even a large settlement.
I am Jemana Kirus, and I assure you that my team will not stop until you get the most for your rights.
If you've been in a car accident, call Jemana, 866-YOUR-RIGHTS.
منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم أفضل المنتجات الغذائية على الإطلاق ماركات سلطان كرافت نسلي بوك ريجل بيكان دانا بالإضافة إلى مجموعة أكبر من المنتجات الغذائية التي تحبها تجدها في كافة المحلات للمزيد من المعلومات قم بزيارة موقعنا زياد.com منتجات زياد من عائلتنا إلى عائلتكم.
And welcome back to Radio Ballady. I'm Ray Hanania.
And I'm Ali Yunus.
And we got to get Zaid to introduce himself, too. Is he old enough do some activism and talking?
not yet. But I want to talk about that. There's a survey I published by a Swedish, I posted on my Facebook page, by a Swedish group published on the Washington Post yesterday, that what are the most racist countries in the world? And they asked a lot of countries around the world if they are respondents population-wise, if they would agree to have a person from another race in their neighborhood or as their neighbor. It was very surprising, the results. The most racist countries in the world.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, which ones?
It was Hong Kong, 71.8%. Second was Bangladesh, 7.5%. And third was Jordan, which was 51.something%. And then India.
Wow. Where was Israel?
Yes.
Or did they? Was Israel on the list, or did they leave Israel off?
No, I couldn't see the whole list, but it obviously, and America was not on the list. Western Europe and America and Latin America, you know, according to the survey, were very tolerant countries. One of the experts justified that because Americans tend to be very polite and were conditioned by the media and the law to not discuss any racial issues, and it has become a taboo. You know, unlike the 60s, you could say, well, I'm against black people or Mexicans or whatever, or Arabs. But now, very, very few people express such an outright racial views. And I think that's why you don't see countries like Israel or Western European countries where there's a lot of racism, you know, against immigrants. But, you know, I was surprised. But not too surprised, because Indians, the way they express themselves are different than the way Americans express themselves. For example, if you ask a Jordanian or Indian, would you allow a foreigner to come be your neighbor? He'll say no. I don't want foreigners in my neighborhood. You know, but this is not to say that they are racist, because you know, society like Jordan is not multi-ethnic, multilingual, multi. It's not like that. It's just one group of people, you know, have been living together for thousands of years. There's no immigration of Americans to Jordan or Latinos or Chinese or whatever. So I think that's why you don't see, you see Jordan as a country that is intolerant and racist, or Bangladesh or Hong Kong, you know, but you don't see multiracial countries like the United States, you know, appear on the list. It has appeared, it's 5% compared to 70% in other countries.
But do they mix up racism, Allie? The term racism, you know, it doesn't just mean I don't want to be with, you know, associated with you. It goes beyond that. It means I hate you, or I dislike you, or I despise you. You know, just wanting to be, you know, yourself and protecting your culture sometimes is portrayed as racism when it's not. I mean, for example, you know, I mean, Israel not being on the list is kind of ironic. It almost sounds like it was done on purpose, because Israelis have time after time said they want to have nothing to do with Christians and Muslims who are Arabs, and they've kicked them out of their neighborhoods. There's no such thing as an Arab settlement or a Christian settlement or a Muslim settlement in Israel. They're all Jewish settlements.
Yes,
and non-Jews are not allowed to live on those things. It's a racist system, you know, of over almost 750,000, you know, people living together as racists in settlements that discriminate against non-Jews. And yet they're not on the list. So it tells me that, you know, I think what you might be saying is that the case in Jordan? You know, Jordan, maybe there are tensions between the Jordanians and Palestinians, and, you know, they're defining the term racism in a different way.
Probably, but I don't think that Jordan, the issue is Jordanian-Palestinian here, because you see...
They on the list? Why do you think they're on the list then?
Well, because the respondents obviously responded that they don't want any to live next to somebody of a different race, of a different culture.
But I wonder if they really took it in the context of, you know, hostility or preference. In other words, I prefer to live next door to people who think like me. Let's be honest, right, Ellie?
Right.
Don't we prefer to be next door to people who think like us? Doesn't mean I hate anybody, but I just want my neighbor to be like me because I'm going to have more in common with them. If they're not like me, I'm not going to have any relations or talking or, you know, we won't share a barbecue. Do you know what I mean? And some of that is normal.
Do you think that
gets twisted up a little bit? Or
I think that's – well, what I think happened is that the survey took the criteria of Western societies, multi-ethnic, multilingual, multiracial, and normally if you go live in a white neighborhood and if you are a black or an Arab or Latino – so that's a legitimate question. Would you like to have somebody from different culture living next to you? But these things do not apply to Jordan, for example, or Bangladesh, for example,
right?
Or India, because it's the same race, same people, you know, different languages, but essentially the same people. So you take a Western problem, a Western issue, and you go ahead and ask a person in China the same question that is applied to a Western society that has, you know, like American societies, a melting pot, different races, different national origins. So it's a legitimate question whether you will live in an Arab neighborhood or a black neighborhood or a Latino neighborhood. So I think it's a wrong questions being asked, and then the label being... Yeah, so and they give it the wrong label, but, you know,
It's almost like it isn't just a language difference. It's a cultural thought difference, the way we approach some topics. Let's go to the phones again at 248-557-3300 and welcome Martin, who called back. Hi, Martin.
How you doing?
Thanks for calling back. What's up?
Well, just wanted to clarify a couple of things.
Go ahead.
I am Chaldean from Iraq. I lived in Jordan for about 5-6 years. Traveled to a couple of different European countries and then settled here in the U.S. The main problem in there is religion. And that's...
Do you think it's because it's too much focus on religion?
A lot of focus on religion.
And people are divided on the basis of religion.
And
that's a good point, Ali. I mean, you know, in the Middle East, I think Martin raises a good point. We're very tribal in a religious way. If we're Shiite, we hang together as Shiites. Sunnis hang and vote together. You know, all the different... And then, the Christians, the Maronites, the Christians are divided. And then we're divided by religious and ethnic groups, like the Chaldeans are Middle Eastern Christians. So doesn't that play into the way that people say, no, I don't want to be next to them. I want to be next to my own.
The simplest thing is, and I always ask this question to a lot of my friends or Arabic friends that newly left, and I always ask them that you go here to Secretary of State and you try to pull your driver's license out, and the only questions they ask you is male, female,
right,
birth, or any of that. They never ask you about religion because that matters nothing about you as a human, as a person that lives here in the U.S. legally, You don't need to be in a specific religion. The first question they ask you in any of the Arabic countries, what's your religion? And I think the only reason to ask that is so they can divide you away or divide you in groups and to make sure that this group can stay with this group. That way, if we ever want to go against any of these divisions, we have them divided already.
Right. And you know, that's something, you know, we see in Israel. My relatives are Christian. They live in Israel. They're Israeli citizens. But when the police stop them and ask them for their ID cards, their ID card has a special code that designates them as being non-Jewish. So even though they're citizens, right away the police officer knows, hey, if I want to beat these people up, I can beat them up because nobody's going to care. Or if I want to chase them out or do whatever. Knowing someone's religion or their ethnicity anywhere, it should be outlawed. It should be just the way you said it. I mean, it should be just your name, your address, and maybe an ID number that doesn't say anything about who you are.
I totally agree with that. And that's what happened in Iraq after the war. People were divided along the sectarian lines. If you're a Shia, you could tell from the last name or your tribal affiliation, or Sunni or others, or a Christian. And Christians were driven out, and Kurds were driven into their own areas and become a mini state right there. Even in a country like Jordan, you tend to divide people not so much as far as religion is concerned, because there's no Shia-Sunni divide here, but you could ask a Palestinian-Jordanian divide. That is, you could ask someone where he from or she from, and if you say, well, I'm from Ramallah originally, or I'm from Karak or Ma'an, East Bank, Jordanian cities, you are divided. But this does not mean animosity, but it could be a basis for discrimination.
Yeah.
Let me interrupt for 1 second.
Go ahead, Mark.
The situation is, he's right that you don't see Shia and Sunni in Jordan, for example, but they're well known who's Palestinian from their last name, from their name. They know this tribe or this last name is a Palestinian last name or it's Jordanian last name.
Right. They know them right away. There's no, you can't hide and be Palestinian in Jordan no matter what they say.
But all tribal societies, all Arab countries are divided along those lines because these societies are not open societies. Yeah, these societies are not open societies the way Europeans are, and they have not graduated into a nation state, a state ruled by the law, not by someone who's above the law, a president or a king. And the basic foundation of these states is the tribe or the family of the leader, the way you see in Assad, or the way you saw in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, or the way you see in Jordan, or the way you saw it in Libya or Morocco. So it's a very common issue, but it isn't an issue that is that a cause for civil war, although it could be utilized, it could be exploited to make divisions in the country. But I think
Martin, thank you for calling. I'm going to let you go because we're going to take Zohair next, too. But thank you, Martin. We appreciate it. Go ahead, Ellie.
Yeah, but I think the main reason is because we are not real nation states yet, where I am a citizen regardless of my tribal affiliation, Maronite or a Christian or a Chaldean or Sunni or Shia. We have not reached that point yet to be a citizen only.
Zohair is on the line. Zohair, thank you for calling. 248-557-3300. Thanks, Zohair.
Good morning.
Hey, Marhaba, how you doing?
Shlonak Eri.
Go ahead, Zohair. What's on your mind?
Yeah. You know, in my opinion, I will talk because there's only a few minutes on the program to love.
Right.
But in my opinion, the Spring Arabic, I can change this name to Autumn Arabic. Why? First of all, you know, we can say God bless America.
God bless America.
God bless America. All the countries.
You got to turn the radio off.
Getting the benefits of what America can do for them. For example, the violence which happened in Syria and in my country in Iraq and in Libya, in north of Africa, Why the violence is between the Muslims, between Sunni and Shia? Why the Christian had been targeted by the Muslims or the fanatic Muslims? Why? This is the question. For example,
well, by fanatics, that, you know,
we have the last accident, which is in Syria. Why they have been kidnapping the two bishops? And thank you so much to lead me to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Zohair. We appreciate it. I respect your opinion. Thank you. One final caller, Nassar, from also on the line at 248-557-3300. Go ahead. You're on Radio Bellity.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Way. Thank you very much, Ali. How are you today? Okay, I want to go fast on the same. Okay. It seems like in Middle East and North Africa, when there is a regime, the minority could survive. When there is like no regime, no system, they are the first to go under the feet. Like we are the Christians of Iraq. When at the worst time of Saddam Hussein, we were better than now. Because since 2003 until today, your neighbors killed the man and kidnapped the girl to rape and kidnapped a child, asked for money. Like so, if we are losing our like citizenship because there's no government, like. So what's the idea of these, all they call it, Arab Spring? Like, we are losing it.
I agree with you. I believe that in the Middle East, because we don't have real democracies, the only way minorities have been able to survive, Christians and Jews in some of these countries, and even some of the minority Muslim groups, you know, is if the government has protected them. And then some of these governments have been terrible dictatorships that have hurt a lot of people, but still it's been these big dictatorships that have been more protective, for example, of the Christians. In democracy, you look at Egypt, it's the Orthodox, you know, the Coptic Orthodox Christians that believe now they're being persecuted and supposedly they have democracy. Maybe this is something we'll talk about on another show, but Nassar, thank you for calling. I appreciate
it. Bye now.
Ali, it's a touchy topic, Ali, because you know, a lot of people think we're being anti-Muslim, but we're not being anti-Muslim. We're dealing with the reality of majority versus minority.
You're right. I mean, it's not, we're not anti-Muslims, obviously. But, you know, I think the real issue with dictatorship always, they're not really protective of minorities or Christians because they love Christians. Dictators, they always love minorities.
Right.
France, when they occupied Lebanon, they helped one minority group, the Maronites. If you go to Syria, they have one minority group, the Alawites. If you go to Libya, one minority group. In Iraq, one minority group versus another. So they use
minorities. And then they use the minorities to strengthen their governments.
In
their
Israel,
dictators.
Israel is a case in point. They use the Druze minority as soldiers, and they fight against other Arabs, their fellow Arabs. And when they want to invade an Arab village, they send the Druze soldiers who are Arabs and Palestinians. So countries always use minorities. They're not protecting the minorities, but they make the impression, they convince minorities that we are protecting you. If we go, you will be slaughtered. Unfortunately, that's what happened in Iraq, slaughtering the Christians. But it isn't because Saddam protected them, because Saddam and other dictators took
over.
He exploited
that protection. Ellie, we're at the end of the show. Where can listeners go to read your columns? Is there a place or blog?
Post, yes. On Huffington Post. I write regular column every week on Huffington Post. On the
so they
section.
Can look up Ali Younis at HuffingtonPost.com, and they can go online to Hananiya.com to read my columns. We should be talking more about what they're doing at Google, and really we should have a national discussion, because if we don't stand up to Google, we're going to be thrown out of the debate. They're removing us from the, you know, the search engines. So your views, my views, they're going to find out that it's going to be very hard to find these views. And we don't have an organization to defend us. Nobody's standing up. So anyway, Ali, thank you. I'm Ray Hananiya.
Thank you, Ray. And I'm Ali Younis.
And we'll be back next week here Friday at 8 a.m. Eastern at WNZK AM 690, Radio Bellity. Our website, radioballity.com. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is WNZK.